Good morning, and welcome to the Tuesday, March 8th, 2022 meeting of the Minnesota House Education Finance Committee. Remote hearings are held in accordance with House Rule 10.01. This rule has been posted online and is linked to in our public meeting notice on the House website. All remote hearings will be recorded and live streamed by House Public Information Services. Members have the contents of their virtual packets available to them, and for the public, these materials have been posted online. Members, if you're looking for all the items in one place, they are attached in the calendar event you have that Ms. Burt sent for today. To get on the list to be recognized by the chair, members using the Zoom interface have the ability to raise their hand via the app. Ms. Burt will place your name on the list to be recognized. Mr. Lee, would you please take the roll?
Thank you, Chair Dabney. Roll call will commence now. Chair Dabney?
Dabney, present.
Representative Sandstead?
Present.
Representative Crescia?
Present.
Representative Bennett?
Present.
Representative Daniels?
Present.
Representative Damuth?
Present.
Representative Dravkowski?
Present.
Representative Erickson?
Erickson, present.
Representative Feist?
Present.
Representative Jordan?
Jordan, present.
Representative Marquardt?
Marquardt, present.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller, present.
Representative Richardson?
Richardson, present.
Representative Thompson?
Thompson, present.
Representative Wolgamott?
Wolgamott, present.
Representative Shung?
Present.
Representative Joaquin? Representative Joaquin? Mr. Chair, there are 16 members present and we have quorum.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lee. Representative Jordan, have you had the opportunity to review the minutes from our Thursday, March 3rd meeting? And if so, would you like to move approval?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. Any discussion to the Jordan motion? Hearing none, members, this is a voice vote. Please unmute yourself. All those in favor of the Jordan motion moving approval of the Thursday, March 3rd meeting minutes, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Jordan. Thank you, members. Today, we'll be hearing from the Office of the Legislative Auditor on the report that they just released this morning that examines the Minnesota Department of Education's role in impacting the achievement gap in Minnesota. First, we'll hear from the OLA, then from Commissioner Mueller, and lastly, we'll be taking member questions. Auditor Randall, I understand you'll be introducing the report today. Welcome back to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. It's my pleasure to be here today. My name is Judy Randall. I'm the Legislative Auditor. And as you mentioned, this morning we released our evaluation on the Minnesota Department of Education's role in addressing the achievement gap. The achievement gap is something that's been a top concern for all of us here in Minnesota, legislators, especially those on this committee, educators, and the general public. You know, we're concerned when we hear reports from the Federal Reserve saying that Minnesota has one of the largest achievement gaps in the nation. But when we dug into this topic, what we found is that we don't have a common definition here in Minnesota or a common shared understanding of the achievement gap. As you likely know, the achievement gap is measured by comparing students on some measure, but which student groups and on what measure? Should we use standardized test scores? Should we use attendance? Should we use graduation rates? I just received an email earlier today about using it based on an individual's ability to meet their own potential. So there's lots of different ways to measure the achievement gap, and these are all valid measures. But despite this importance that we all feel about the achievement gap, there is not state law that defines achievement gap. State law does not establish this common understanding. It does not establish a common method for measuring the achievement gap. Further, state law doesn't establish clear responsibilities for the Department of Education related to addressing the achievement gap. Instead, what we found in law is a few mentions of the achievement gap, basically related to specific programs and basically one of the goals, one of many goals for these different K-12 programs or initiatives. So in other words, while we are all pretty darn concerned about the achievement gap, we don't think the statutes reflect that concern. So in the absence of explicit requirements in law, we looked at the department's administration and oversight of the four specific K-12 education initiatives where the law does talk about the achievement gap. So in this report, we have recommendations, frankly, to you all, to the legislature, to define achievement gap in law and establish some common shared understanding. But we also have a number of recommendations to the department related to these specific K-12 education initiatives that we've looked at. To get more into the details of our findings and recommendations, I would like to now turn to Sarah De La Cueva, who is the manager for this evaluation. Mr. Chair, thanks for making time for us today.
Thank you, Auditor Randall. Ms. De La Cueva, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Sarah De La Cueva, and I'm with the Office of the Legislative Auditor, and I am going to share my screen. Can everyone see my screen? I'm getting thumbs up. Thank you. Excellent. Well, thank you, Ms. Randall, for that introduction. I'm pleased to be here today to discuss our evaluation of the Minnesota Department of Education's role in addressing the achievement gap. I would also like to acknowledge the other members of this evaluation team, Caitlin Zanoni-Wells and Kelly Lair, and thank them for their hard work on this evaluation. Okay, to start off with, I would like to explain how this presentation will be structured, and which also allows me to talk a little bit about our evaluation scope. I should go ahead and tell you that we did not solve the problem of the achievement gap, which comes as a surprise to no one, I'm sure. We also didn't answer a lot of important questions about it. Our evaluation was very narrowly focused on the Department of Education's role and how that role is defined by Minnesota statutes. So after I present some quick background information, I'm going to move on to explain what we found about statutes themselves and the nature of the role they establish for MDE. I'm also going to explain the four K-12 initiatives that we evaluated and sort of what our findings and recommendations are for Minnesota Department of Education and the legislature. I want to make clear that we understand that MDE considers the achievement gap to be central to its role and that most of what the department does relates to the achievement gap in some way, but we did have to narrow it to have a manageable scope of work and to sort of focus where statutes establish a link between the department and the achievement gap. So a little bit of background. First, how we define the achievement gap. The achievement gap is the difference in academic achievement or educational outcomes among different groups of students. And in order to have a gap, there's sort of two components to consider. The first is which group of students you're comparing. The academic studies we reviewed often used racial or ethnic gaps or gaps between different students of different socioeconomic statuses, but you could have other gaps too, students who are English learners or not, for example. The second component is how you're going to measure them. And this is often done with standardized testing and math and reading. It's probably the most well-known, but also could be any number of things such as graduation rates, rates of disciplinary action, attendance, to name a few. As you've all heard, Minnesota has substantial achievement gaps in multiple areas, and I'm going to show just one quick example using the 2019 NAEP assessment for fourth grade reading. NAEP is the National Assessment for Educational Progress, as you have probably heard of before. The teal bars on this graph represent the differences in the average NAEP scores between different groups of students. On the top bar, we have the non-Hispanic, white, and American Indian students, and the gap between the averages of those two student groups was 37 points. You can see also on this graph that the difference between non-Hispanic white students and Black students and Hispanic students, there's also large gaps there and a smaller gap between non-Hispanic white students and Asian students. So when we started looking at this project, we first looked for the term achievement gap in statutes. We also looked for the terms opportunity gap and disparities to see where we could find them and what statute says MDE's role was. I'd like to pause here to acknowledge that I know a lot of people prefer the term opportunity gap to achievement gap. We chose to use achievement gap because it is what is more dominant in state law. But when we looked for those terms, we found, frankly, relatively few mentions of achievement gap. And they were focused on those four initiatives that we had on an earlier slide. We found that there's not a single clear definition of achievement gap in Minnesota statutes. Some initiatives include groups to measure, but none of them include how the gap should be measured. Further, we found that the statutes do not clearly articulate MDE's responsibilities for three of the four cases for those initiatives. They assign responsibilities to MDE for the initiative as a whole, but not things that they should be doing specific to the achievement gap. So we recommend that the legislature consider defining the term achievement gap in law to underscore its importance and to give us all a common understanding of the term. I think it would also be good for MDE or for the legislature to take this opportunity to define opportunity gap and how the two terms differ for the purposes of state law. Second, the legislature should consider more explicitly defining MDE's role with respect to addressing the achievement gap. This could, for example, look like requiring regular reporting on the extent of the gap using measures that the legislature deems are important. I'm now going to dive into each of the four K-12 initiatives we evaluated, the first of which is World's Best Workforce. World's Best Workforce is an accountability framework that requires all school districts and charter schools to create a strategic plan addressing five goals established in statute. One of those goals is to reduce the achievement gap among all racial and ethnic groups and students of different socioeconomic statuses. Schools and districts must also report to MDE annually on whether they met each of the goals in their World's Best Workforce plan. As I mentioned previously, the World's Best Workforce statute does not establish responsibilities specific to the achievement gap. MDE must administer the entire initiative, and one of the key responsibilities is to oversee performance for school districts and charter schools. Statutes require MDE to submit an annual report to the legislature. MDE has done this, and that report has included, as required, a list of districts and charter schools that did not submit reports to the department. However, it has not included another component that is required in state law. These reports have never listed the districts and charter schools that failed to meet their World's Best Workforce goals. And these goals are, as a reminder, should include reducing achievement gaps. And this is mandated report as a way that legislatures could be keeping tabs on how districts are doing in reducing their own achievement gaps. This is a separate requirement, but there is also a part of World's Best Workforce that requires MDE to evaluate for any three-year period whether districts have made sufficient progress in striving for World's Best Workforce. And we think that the statutes do not define the term sufficient progress or clearly explain how the department should be evaluating for sufficient progress. So we do have a couple of recommendations here. The first is for MDE to annually identify and report on the districts and charter schools that do not meet their World's Best Workforce goals as required by statute. And second, we recommend that the legislature define sufficient progress and the method that MDE should be using to measure it. This might mean looking again at those goals, or it could be different things, such as looking at certain standardized test scores, graduation rates, and comparing school districts against each other or against department-determined thresholds. The legislature could also place additional emphasis on the achievement gap by saying that sufficient progress means progress in reducing the achievement gap. I'm going to shift gears now to achievement and integration. And this program funds school districts that are working to increase integration and student achievement. Charter schools are not eligible to participate. And according to statutes, one of the program purposes is to reduce academic disparities. While some districts participate voluntarily, some are required to participate, and those are the districts for which the proportion of protected students, which is students who identify as a race or ethnicity other than non-Hispanic white, sufficiently exceeds the proportions of the protected students in neighboring school districts. That's one of the ways to qualify. There are about 170 participating districts, each of which writes a three-year plan that must establish various goals, including at least one related to reducing the achievement gap. And at the end of that three-year plan, MDE must evaluate whether school districts have met its goals, including whether they reduced the academic disparities highlighted in their plans. We discuss this responsibility next. Statutes require that MDE complete its review of school district progress reports by August 1st of the year the plan ends. We believe, however, that the statutory timing is impractical. For the Minnesota Department of Education to determine whether districts have met their goals, they need to review the district's progress reports. And between June, when a traditional school year ends, and August 1st is less than a two-month period. That's a pretty quick turnaround for districts to submit reports to MDE and for MDE to review them and provide feedback. And further, MCA scores are typically not available until after August 1st. And MCAs, a lot of districts rely on MCAs as a way to measure their own progress on their achievement goals. After MDE determines which districts have met their goals, if a district did not meet its goals, then it must engage in improvement planning. And through this, MDE is required by statutes to develop an improvement plan and timeline with consultation with the district. And this is an area where we think MDE has not done what statute strictly requires. MDE does not develop the improvement plans. Rather, districts develop those plans, and MDE assists when requested. We do believe, however, that the statutes give MDE too much ownership over this plan development. In 2017, for example, there were 119 school districts that did not meet at least one goal. For MDE to take the lead on developing more than 100 improvement plans is really would take considerable resources. We recommend that the legislature consider revising the deadlines for by which MDE must review progress towards goals, towards district goals. And we suggest that the districts submit their reports to the Department of Education in September, and that the Department of Education review them by the first of the year. This would give the districts time to get that MCA, those MCA scores, and incorporate them into their report, and then MDE would have time to review them and still give districts time to use them afterwards for their improvement planning. We also think that the legislature should amend Minnesota statutes to shift the responsibility for improvement planning from MDE to the school districts, but with MDE guidance. We think that MDE should be taking a more active role than they currently do in developing those improvement plans. The school district should develop them, and MDE should guide and consult with each district throughout that process. I'm now going to turn to something completely different. This is American Indian education, and this is the one area where statute provides a pretty direct link between the Department of Education and the achievement gap. Statutes require MDE to write a strategic plan for American Indian education, and one of the goals required by statute is to close the achievement gap between American Indian students and their more advantaged peers. We found that MDE does not currently have a strategic plan specific to American Indian education. MDE has explained to us that their department-wide strategic plan satisfies this requirement, but we disagreed for a couple of reasons. First, the statutory requirement to have a plan for American Indian education is unique. We searched statutes and did not find examples of MDE being required to develop a strategic plan for students experiencing homelessness or for students receiving special education services or any other demographic group. That there is a requirement for a plan for American Indian education suggests to us that it should be something more specific than the department-wide strategic plan. Further, the department-wide plan groups American Indian students with many other groups and establishes the same goals and strategies for each of them. For example, the plan establishes third grade reading proficiency target of 64% for American Indian students. It also establishes that same target for English learners, students from low-income families, students experiencing homelessness, among other groups. MDE's plan does not acknowledge that the different demographic groups may experience different circumstances and challenges, and that strategies that help one may not help the others in the same way. We recommend that the Minnesota Department of Education develop a strategic plan specific to American Indian education. MDE has begun this work. It has had strategic planning activities in 2019 with the help of the American Indian community, and we think that it should continue this important work going forward. This is the final initiative that we're going to discuss. This is the Regional Centers of Excellence. And the Regional Centers provide assistance for certain low-performing schools. And the work is done by non-state employees operating out of 6 Minnesota service cooperatives. MDE has a role to support and oversee these regional centers. And the regional centers, one of the things that they must do is work with school site leadership teams to implement programs to close the achievement gap. So with respect to our findings about the regional centers, we found the first that MDE has satisfied their statutory requirement to provide technical and programmatic support to the regional centers. We heard that the directors of the regional centers thought that MDE was a good partner for them. And a very important finding here is that the regional centers appear to have had a positive impact on the schools that they've served. MDE has reported that schools supported by the regional centers have outperformed other similar schools in terms of reducing their achievement gaps. We surveyed all school district superintendents and charter school directors, and they had overwhelmingly positive things to say about the regional centers as well. However, it's really important to note that the services the regional centers may provide, and thus the amount of the work they can do to close the achievement gap, are constrained by the source of their funding. The regional centers rely heavily on Title I funding, and using Title I funding, they provide comprehensive support, which is sort of ongoing on-site support for individual schools, for specific schools that are identified under certain federal requirements. There's a little bit of additional federal funding, and then $1 million annually that the state legislature appropriates. And this funding allows the regional centers to provide professional development opportunities for an additional set of schools that that MDE identifies. So the total of the schools that are currently being helped by the regional centers is about 360. So given that the regional centers of excellence have had a positive impact on schools trying to reduce their achievement gaps, we think that the legislature should consider making the services of the regional centers more widely available. As I said, MDE has identified about 360 schools that can access the service, and that's out of more than 2,000 schools statewide. Since the services are constrained by federal funding, the legislature would need to provide additional state funds in order to expand the services in a meaningful way. We think that the legislature could do so by expanding the staffing of the regional centers themselves, or by piloting ways to replicate the service model within MDE. But we think either way, it would be good to build in sort of robust data collection and analysis to show that the impact of the regional centers on these schools that they're helping. So that is the conclusion of my formal presentation. I thank you for your time. I'm happy to take any questions as soon, either now or after the department has given us testimony. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Dela Cueva. Next is Commissioner Mueller providing a response to the report, and then we'll go to member questions. Commissioner Mueller, always good to have you before the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Heather Mueller, and I have the pleasure of serving as the Commissioner of Education, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to join you all today. My colleague, Government Relations Director Adosh Uni, will be running the PowerPoint presentation. As we start in this presentation, I think we're ready to move to the next slides, Adosh, and the next one. Thank you. As I start, I'd like to first thank the Office of the Legislative Auditor for the time and effort that they put into this report, as well as the collegial and collaborative process through which the OLA engaged MDE. The department agrees with the OLA's assessment and findings that MDE is best positioned to help districts and schools close the achievement gap when it is provided the resources and allowed to directly work to support schools. While MDE is glad to have the opportunity to review and reflect on past performance, there do still remain some portions of the report to which we take some exception. The Department of Education is a learning organization that fully believes in continuous improvement and the continuous improvement process. And because of this, we recognize that there are certainly areas that require both improvement and growth. The feedback from the OLA outlined in this report helps to highlight some of the areas where we can improve in these three specific programs. We do appreciate the report also highlighting all of the work that MDE does through our regional centers of excellence. These centers were actually created by the Department of Education for implementation of the federal ESSA guidelines to support schools in their localized approach to meeting their identified needs. And we're continuing to identify ways to be able to expand support through these professionals that offer our support to our schools. The report most clearly, though, demonstrates that people matter in providing support to schools, especially when those people, the education professionals, are able to dedicate their time to supporting schools, not compliance actions. It's important to note that when looking at the four programs evaluated in the report, the Office of American Indian Education, Achievement and Integration, and the World's Best Workforce, these three programs combined have a total of 7 dedicated FTEs, and their work is directed by state statute. In contrast, the regional centers of excellence have 57 FTEs, and the department directs their work. Put simply, MDE lacks the adequate capacity in 3 of the 4 programs to provide the oversight and comprehensive support that our schools deserve. MDE would welcome more funding from the legislature for FTEs to build our human capacity and to support our schools and our students. Next slide, please. The term achievement gap in education is easily defined. As the OLA has said, it is the disparity in academic performance between groups of students. The differences between the achievement gap and the opportunity gap are also easily delineated. The cause of the achievement gap and the strategies to close the gaps in both opportunity and achievement, however, are far more complex, and the title of the report does not reflect the full scope of the work that MDE has undertaken to support public schools in closing the achievement gap in Minnesota. In the space of the pre-K-12 education, MDE engages in a wide range of activities to support all 544 districts and charter schools, approximately 900,000 pre-kindergarten through grade 12 students, 82,000 adult learners, and more than 52,000 licensed teachers and countless school staff. We appreciate that the OLA is acknowledging that this report is not a full evaluation of MDE's role in the achievement gap, but only the 4 programs that they evaluated. Next slide, please. As the state agency, MDE has a responsibility to address the systemic structure, processes, and barriers that have resulted in persistent achievement gaps. We believe that the report does not cover the full depth and breadth of the agency's leadership and work as it pertains to the achievement gap, nor does it outline the specific actions MDE has taken to support public schools in eliminating disparities and ensuring that every child receives a high-quality education, no matter their race or zip code. As schools work to close gaps, MDE's support includes much more than the 3 statutorily required programs and the regional centers of excellence included in this report. Those areas are inclusive of academic supports, early learning, safe and healthy schools, inclusive and welcoming teaching and learning environments, and family engagement. Now, as I've said, those are just samplings of some of the work that we do with our schools in supporting their efforts to close the achievement gap. Next slide. MDE is thankful for the strong partnerships that we have with our school board association, with our school administrator associations, teacher associations, parent and student organizations, and community advocates. We know that their in-field real-time experiences in their communities are vital to ensuring that the needs of their communities are being met. With that, Minnesota's locally elected school boards hold the majority of the authority to partner with school leaders to set the vision, align resources, and set policies to meet the needs of every student in their schools. These officials represent the voices of their communities. And while we respect our partnership and local control, it can often place MDE in the position of recommending and strongly encouraging evidence-based practices that support closing the achievement gap without the ability to require public schools to implement them. This is not an excuse or a complaint. It is a reality that we must consider as we continuously improve. Next slide. As noted earlier, this report really highlights the importance of people and how much they matter in the work that we do to support our schools. The department receives funding from both the state and federal government, and as a result, both the federal and most of the state funds are tied to specific programs. 60% of MDE's budget are dedicated federal funds, and 40% are state funds, most of which are appropriated by the legislature. MDE receives $41 million per year, which is $19 million earmarked for specific programs or services, and then $22 million in general funds. Next slide. As I said, seven of the 412 FTEs do the work of the three programs. In the Office of American Indian Education, three FTE are funded through the agency's general operating funds. There are no funds directly tied from the state. In the area of achievement integration, there are three FTE, 2.2 through the achievement integration revenue, and 0.8 is funded through the agency's general operating funds. And the World's Best Workforce actually is not funded by the state at all. There's one FTE that comes from our federally funded Title IV funds. The regional service centers of excellence, by contrast, have 57 FTEs, most of which are federally funded. $1 million per year is dedicated, most of which, approximately $755,000, is allocated for grants to the six regional center service cooperatives to fund staff salaries. The $1 million also funds 1.2 program FTEs, rent, and then the other operating costs within the agency. Of the $41 million that the Department of Education receives in state funding, $19 million are dedicated program funds and $22 million are general funds. Of that $22 million, $15.5 million goes to 139 FTEs. $6.5 million is spent in rent, utilities, fleet services, IT services, employee development, and all of our other fixed costs. And of that $6.5 million, when I identified IT services, $3 million is devoted to the IT support needed for both external and internal facing work. Next slide. We agree that achievement integration programs could benefit from more statutory clarity around deadlines and MDE and district partnership focusing on plan improvement in achievement and integration. However, a deeper role for MDE in the development of districts' achievement and integration plans is simply not feasible under the current administrative funding model and statute for the achievement and integration program. MDE's most recent achievement integration report to the legislature showed that during the 2018-19 school year, 170 Minnesota school districts, which is more than half of the state's 329 school districts, participated in the program. All of these were traditional public school districts because charter schools are not eligible to participate. While MDE staff review these progress reports annually, they place the greatest emphasis on the third and final progress report of a plan cycle. The third progress report shows whether, over the entire three-year implementation period, districts ultimately met their goals, at least one of which must be related to reducing the achievement gap. MDE agrees with the recommendations to change the timeline for plan submission, and that's why we have recommended language changing the timelines for a one-plan submission for all plans to the Department of Education. It's also important to note as we look at achievement and integration funding that, as we mentioned, there are three people within the Department of Education who support the work, including the review of 170 achievement integration plans each year. We receive 0.2% or about $290,000 a year of the achievement integration revenue that goes out to schools for administration, which is roughly 2.2 FTE for rent, supplies, and other operating costs. And we have an additional 0.8 of funding that we put in for additional general funding operating costs. As we turn our attention to the World's Best Workforce, next slide, the plain language of the statute does not state that reviews must occur annually. This three-year period, the department understands, was specifically intended to mirror the requirements of the three-year review cycle under the federal expectations. MDE has and will continue to meet the three-year review requirement. If the legislature chooses to follow the recommendations of the OLA regarding annual evaluation and reporting, then additional funds will need to be allocated to meet this expectation. We also agree with the OLA that adding some additional language about what sufficient progress looks like or additional parameters for these goals would be helpful. And again, we agree with the recommendation of changing the timeline. It's important to note, next slide, for the World's Best Workforce funding, that MDE receives no dedicated state funding to operate the World's Best Workforce program. So we have 544 school districts and charter schools who are required to submit a World's Best Workforce plan based on state statute, and there are no funds dedicated to this work. We have one FTE supports all of this, and that person is federally funded. The final piece is around American Indian Education Strategic Plan. The department disagrees with the assertion in the report that the Office of American Indian Education does not have a strategic plan specific to American Indian education. American Indian students are within every facet of education, from gifted and talented to special education, and our strategic plan is based on that. The agency-wide strategic plan encompasses the department's whole vision for education in Minnesota, and each of the objectives, goals, and key strategies were designed with those requirements in mind. The department's strategic plan focuses on American Indian education and includes specific goals, specific strategies, and specific action steps that are aligned with the work and the mission of the Office of American Indian Education. The goals are measurable, the strategies are focused on American Indian students, families, and educators, and the action steps are clear and concrete. Through tribal consultations, engagement with the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council, and our ongoing partnership with the Tribal Nations Education Committee, the Office of American Indian Education has developed the American Indian components of the department's strategic plan. It's also important to note that there is a baseline expectation for ESSA regarding the percent of students who are meeting proficiency, and those expectations are common and public, and MDE has progress goals for each student group to meet these expectations. Next slide. For funding, MDE receives no state funding to support the work of the Office of American Indian Education. Due to a budget deficit in 2002, the Office of American Indian Education was reduced from 3 statewide offices to 3 FTEs. These staff support 173 American Indian Education Aid eligible schools, including the review of their American Indian education plans. The Office of American Indian Education is also responsible for supporting 37 districts that are required to do ESSA tribal consultation through federal programs, 11 government-to-government tribal consultations. And the historical purpose of explaining this is that in fiscal year 2012, there were no FTEs in the Office of American Indian Education. In 2013, there was one that was added. And between the fiscal years of 2014 to 2021, there were 3 FTEs that were funded solely out of the Department of Education's general operating funds. This model, as we think about next slide, as we're moving toward conclusion, the regional centers of excellence, it's important to note, is a great model, but it cannot be replicated in the way that the OLA recommends because of its tie to ESSA. The ESSA law stipulates that there needs to be a distinct difference between the tiers of support for those that receive comprehensive support and those that receive targeted support and services. Finally, MDE respectfully disagrees with the OLA on its assessment of MDE's overall strategic plan. MDE has measurable goals, evidence-based strategies, and specific action steps delineated by what is required under statute and what can be achieved administratively by MDE. The plan is evidence of the leadership, partnership, and support provided to all Minnesota public schools, even though there is neither an expectation nor a requirement in statute that a strategic plan exist. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Commissioner. We'll now shift to member questions. Representative Feist, you've been patient. Thank you very much.
Yep, thank you. I had a question for the OLA, and I guess just also a comment. On one of their slides, they talked about the reading proficiency goals, and they said we only have one third grade reading proficiency goal for all of these disparate groups. And then the rest of the PowerPoint slide was talking about the plans. And so I would just like to say, like, and maybe they can clarify, but I think obviously we need different plans for different demographics that face different challenges. But I'm a little troubled by the idea that we would set different goals for these groups because, you know, that reading proficiency is so critically important for every opportunity they have for the rest of their life. And the idea that we'd be like, oh, well, you know, we'll set like lower goals for these group, these kids, I think would be really problematic. And so I'd like clarification. Thank you.
Ms. Dela Cueva.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Feist for that question. I agree completely. We are not suggesting at all that there should be lower expectations for certain groups. It was what we were trying to illustrate there was that the goals and the strategies within the plan do not differentiate between those different groups. And while, and I I can see how just the slide in isolation would make that a little bit unclear. So we think that, you know, it's reasonable to have baseline goals for all students, but that the strategies, but that the strategic plan for American Indian education should go deeper into the strategies about how American Indian students in particular are going to be brought along to meet that goal. Does that help?
Representative Feist, any follow-up?
Yes, thank you. That's really helpful clarification.
Thank you. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the OLA, to Ms. Dela Cueva, and to her team. You know, they worked 9 months at preparing this report, and they've done a stellar job. Lots of great points made. And the commissioner heard from me just a couple of hours ago in our commission audit hearing, so I won't ask her questions. I'm just going to make some comments about some of her remarks. And just to remind everybody, in 128.103, excuse me, which was created some time ago, the mission statement for the state is that individual academic achievement is first and foremost. And, you know, keeping that in mind as the mission point, it is a question about why wouldn't closing the achievement gap always be priority? And of course, closing the achievement gap is centered around reading proficiently by third grade, which is something that Representative Marquardt put into the World's Best Workforce Plan in 2013. Districts were to strive for that. And, you know, it's been a lot of years since 2013 and they began this mission. So, you know, when reports are required, the department needs to follow the law because this is all in statute and they need to keep track of the districts that are not reaching their goals. They're striving to reach this goal. Another comment I wanted to make in regard to strategic plans, these are also in statute. And because part of the creation of the education code says the department has to uphold everything that's in statute, then, you know, there's no reason that that's not followed through. And to place funding in other places and not in these areas that the OLA audit reveals is a travesty. Because reading proficiently by third grade and being able to compute math problems proficiently is essential. After all, we had NCLB and then we moved to ESSA, and a statewide and federal accountability are linked together. So that's very clear in statute. As we created standards and assessments, that's a priority. So it's very confusing to listen to the department talk about you know, all the other areas that they have gone off to promote and continue to create that take away from the emphasis in every school district and charter on reading proficiently by third grade and also being able to reach the math standards. In regard to AIM into the achievement and integration, I believe rulemaking has never come to the fore when that was something that was supposed to be done years ago. Finally, my hat's off to the service cooperatives. It is they who are doing yeoman's work to help districts and charters. But, you know, they're apart from the department. And so there are many employees who are going out and helping districts. It is, you know, a real boon to us to know that we have at least one place we can look to for concentration on closing the achievement gap. And they do training. And, you know, the commissioner mentions the BOLD plan that is in the governor's proposal, but really the BOLD is way too broad. It should focus primarily and only on reading proficiently by third grade, because our children suffer when they can't read proficiently when they are in those early grades. That is what causes many of their additional problems. They feel insecure. They feel anxious. And so our concentration has to be on closing the achievement gap, following the law, following what we have in statute. So thank you, Mr. Chair, and the commissioner doesn't have to respond if she doesn't want it because she's heard all of this already. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Representative Youakim, you have your hand up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I just wanted to thank the OLA for taking that deeper dive into those three different areas, and also thank MDE for all the work they're doing. The point to really take away from that is MDE is doing work in more than just these three areas and closing the opportunity gap, and that is one of their highlights of their focus on making sure they're meeting all students where we're at. It was nice to see the data prove out that our regional centers of excellence are doing great work. And I didn't have a chance to read the whole OLA report, but it looks like Ms. Delclava, it looks like you're recommending an expansion of the regional centers of excellence. But I also understand from the commissioner that their hands are kind of tied what they can do with that federal money. So could you very briefly explain what you'd like to see the expansion, how you'd like to see that expansion go for the regional centers of excellence? And maybe if the commissioner wants to jump in, my push would be that we put legislative money towards this so that we could do more preventative things with the regional centers of excellence. One prime example would be to work with training all our teachers and folks around SEL for those kiddos starting in kindergarten to get ready to make sure they can read to meet all their needs besides just so that they can learn how to read and do those math statistics that Representative Erickson is talking about.
Ms. De La Cueva, and then Commissioner, you're on deck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Youakim. I appreciate that question. I'm happy to talk a little bit more about our vision for the regional centers. As the commissioner pointed out, what the centers can do is constrained by their federal funding and the requirements in ESSA. There are certain state and federal funds that are less restricted and that allow them to have, there's a small number of FTEs that can work with any school or district. And that's some professional development happens there. So perhaps that could be expanded to more schools if we had additional state funding. However, we could also explore, adding a new and different function to the regional centers. It could be a staff that are funded by the state and ready to do some of that more preventative work that Representative Youakim mentioned. Or if we're replicating the model within MDE, then obviously there are different considerations as well. And I'll allow the commissioner to weigh in if she would like, because obviously I think she probably knows a little bit more about all the intricacies of this funding than I do.
Thank you, Ms. De La Cueva. Commissioner.
Thank you, Chair Dabney, and thank you, Representative Youakim. It is important to note that there are limitations. I mean, we have looked at the ability to be able to expand the regional centers and the number of that schools that they can serve, but they are limited because we need to provide through that funding very specific comprehensive and targeted support that cannot be identical to anything else that anyone is receiving. And so we have always directed the work that our service cooperatives are doing in our partnership. And so not of the service cooperatives, but of regional centers of excellence. And our partnership with the service cooperatives is incredibly important and vital. And we agree that additional funding to be able to look at how we would be able to expand that is something that we have also been seeking, looking at being able to expand things like bold literacy, being able to expand social emotional learning, and looking at developing and expanding Compass through our regional centers is what we have been trying to do with the funds that we have set aside. We did have the influx of the ARP funds, which has given us the opportunity to do exactly what Ms. De La Cueva and the OLA have suggested. And so our ability to be able to maintain that, I think, is a really important piece. And to your point around making sure that we have those pieces in place from early learning on, we know that in order to be able to meet the needs of our students reading at third grade and on third grade level, that we need to be able to help to support them in a number of different ways. And when their Maslow's hierarchy of needs are not also met, then we have some struggles. And I think to that point, that's where the rest of the mission actually comes in out of Statute 128.03. And that is beyond ensuring individual academic achievement. It's also an informed citizenry and a highly productive workforce, which is inclusive of systems that focus on the learner, promotes and values diversity, provides participatory decision-making, ensures accountability, models diplomatic democratic principles, creates and sustains a climate for change, provides personalized learning environments, encourages learners to reach their maximum potential, and then integrates and coordinates human services.
Thank you, Commissioner. And before I throw it back for any brief follow-up from Representative Youakim, can you clarify one thing for me? Whose employees are the regional centers of excellence? Are those NDE employees? Are those service cooperative employees? I'm not clear on that. If you could help me, please.
They are MDE employees because we have the opportunity to pay for them. So that funding actually is come from the Department of Education, and that flows through our service cooperatives.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Representative Youakim, any brief follow-up?
I would just say that I am a big proponent of funding what works, and it looks like the OLA has showed us that the Regional Centers of Excellence are doing excellent work, and that we should look at being a better partner as a legislature and putting funding towards that so that we can move into that preventative wellness realm as well. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Youakim. It also seems that part of the message of the report is fund what we ask people to do. Representative Thompson.
Yes, Chair. I want to say thank you to the Minnesota Department of Education and OLA for presenting. And everything that I say thus forward is coming from love, because I did hear one of the first things I heard was that the law doesn't define achievement gaps. It was almost like listening to somebody scratch the chalkboard in the classroom. Because Black mothers whose sons are being incarcerated faster than they can get an education here in this state can define what an achievement gap means and the disparities. I heard talk about MCA scores. Fact is, MCA scores do not define or help assess our children. I'll give you a case in point. My kids don't take the assessment test because they bomb it all the time, but both of my kids have 4.0 GPAs. And so here we are, you know, this achievement gap was man-made. Historically, African-Americans were strung up by a tree and got their backs beat if they were caught reading, writing, or learning. And now we just name an achievement gap because Black young men continue to be at the top of this achievement gap. And if you really want to know how to fix the achievement gap, we have to transform these systems together, meaning bring everybody to the table, including the parents, the students, teachers. Another thing is when teachers say this is what we need in the classroom, believe them and fund them. We ask for teachers of color, or we'll give you a sprinkle of that. We ask for culturally intelligent administrators, culturally intelligent behavioral health specialists, culturally intelligent mental health providers, things that we know would soften the achievement gaps in our school. And it's almost like trying to bite on a brick to get these resources in our community. And I can't speak for the American Indian community. I can't speak for the Somali community. I can't speak for the BIPOC community. I can only speak for the being BIPOC because I've been a Black man all my life. I have 3 Black sons and 2 daughters. I, myself, have been in the classroom where a teacher has told me that I wouldn't amount to nothing. I'd be dead or in jail by the age of 25. Well, hey, Ms. Finch, I'm a Minnesota legislator now. You know, and so when I say culturally intelligent, I know what I'm talking about because I'm a walking, breathing testimony of what we need in our schools. Plus, I worked for St. Paul Public Schools for 11 years, and I've watched them struggle to get the resources so that they can fix the achievement gap. And I don't really have questions. It's just like it's triggering for me, Chair and Commissioner, to hear that we have to define it. We don't have a definition. When I know the definition, because my cousins, my nieces, my nephews, they are living in this achievement gap. They do not do school well. How did my son's friend go from being on the honor roll to now he's bringing F's home every day because he's not interested in the curriculum? We're asking for career pathways to be put back into the schools. Kids don't want to go to the University of Minnesota all the time. Some of these kids want to be plumbers, electricians, carpenters, but we ripped all of these career pathways out of the schools and then say, how do we fix the achievement gap? Well, listen to the students, listen to the teachers, and bring the things that worked before back. Scrap everything that didn't work. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Thompson. Representative Marquardt, the father of the world's best workforce.
Well, thank you so much, Mr. Chair, for having this hearing today. And I really appreciate the OLA report, Department of Education being here. You know, closing the achievement gap is probably the most important thing we can do for our economy. And you look at this workforce shortage right now, it's because there's, you know, baby boomers like myself retiring and not enough young people replacing us. And demographers and economists have talked about this for years, that you're going to need to make up for the lack of new people going into the workforce, you're going to need increased productivity. And I remember Rob Grunwald from the Minneapolis Federal Reserve Bank testifying and saying that if we could close the achievement gap within 10 to 20 years, it would increase our GDP by 2 to 5%, which at the time was up to $5 billion. It's significant. And so, you know, the world's best workforce was set up as one of the goals and just one part of it. We know the world's best workforce is just one part of the whole scheme in doing this. But it was to set up a strategic plan to get there, to close the achievement gap, among other things. And I think, you know, the Department of Education has done a great job getting that information out. I know when it started and making sure schools were on the right track, getting back all the reports and so forth. The next part, though, that's really important is what do you do with the data? And one of the things that I thought was interesting that was brought up in the report is that the statute says that you will look at any consecutive three-year period. And MBE's looking at that as just looking at every 3 years. The intent was, as mentioned in the old LA report, is that you would look at 3 years. So you could see, are you moving, are you progressing up over those 3 years? And if you're not, then you had to go in for some remedial action. So that 3 years is very important to see if, in fact, you're moving from year one to year two to year three. And the last kind of part I'll mention on this is that in statute, it says that MDE can use up to 2% of a school district's general fund allocation to come up with strategies or whatever might work. And at the time, it was thought of, you know, through these regional centers of excellence, which I agree. I think MBA has done a wonderful job. And they are a wonderful part of all this. But they would work with school districts to increase this. So I agree with many of the suggestions and recommendations made by the OLA, is that we can't just gather the information. We actually have to do something with it. And I think the tools are in place to be able to do that. And I think it's, you know, if we have to clarify some things, I think that's something we need to do. But I think the format's in place, but we have to really look at the data. And all of us have to come together, MDE and everything, and then working with school districts to move ahead. And maybe it in itself can't be solved just through the school. I mean, there's a lot of societal factors that can lead to the achievement gap, but that's part of the strategic plan is, you know, maybe there's other partners that have to be out there. So, Mr. Chair, thank you. I mean, this is a great report. And, you know, we have not made adequate progress on closing the achievement gap. We know that. We all know that. And I think in looking at the data, coming up with strategic plans, and then working with school districts to get there is the key. And I think we haven't. I think this report shows how we can get there. So thank you again, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Marquardt. With that, members, thank you for the questions. Ms. De La Cueva, Auditor Randall, thank you for being here. Thank you for the work and the presentation. Commissioner, thank you for your comments. I'm sure we have not left this topic yet, so nor should we. Thank you very much. Members, we do have one bill hearing, and I will ask folks to be focused and brief in their comments and questions. I wanted to give the OLA discussion the time it needed to run. But we are hearing House File 3434 from Representative Frazier this morning. Representative Richardson, would you like to make a motion to move House File 3434 to be before the committee and lay it over for further consideration and possible inclusion in a future omnibus bill?
I will wrap that up, and so moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Welcome back to the committee, Representative Frazier. Before you introduce your bill, I understand you have an author's amendment. I will move the A2 amendment to be before the committee to put the bill in the shape the author desires. How's that for you, Representative Frazier?
That is perfect, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Outstanding. Representative Frazier, can you just briefly describe the amendment for members?
Yes, I can. Essentially, this amendment addresses a concern raised by MDE. What the language does is it allows for, initially, the bill required MDE to develop the curriculum for ethnic studies. This changes that so that it's now the duty of the task force to do that.
Thank you very much. Members, this is a voice vote on the chair's motion to approve the A2 amendment for Representative Frazier. If you would please unmute. All those in favor of the A2 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Representative Frazier, to your bill as amended, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll try to be as brief as possible, but I will say that this discussion was timely today from the OLA and Department of Education, and this is one of the tools that Minnesota desperately needs to help close our opportunity and achievement gap. So House File 3434 ensures that all Minnesotan students have access to ethnic studies and provides resources to support school districts in implementing ethnic studies courses. Specifically, it requires ethnic studies instructions in all K-12 schools, starting with high school students, who will be required to take an ethnic studies course to graduate. It creates an ethnic studies advisory task force composed of a diverse array of educators, students, and community experts to advise MDE on ethnic studies content and standards. And it allocates funding to MDE to support the development of ethnic studies content standards and provides aid to school districts to support the implementation of ethnic studies requirements. Now, more than a third of our students in Minnesota schools are students of color. But Minnesota classrooms have not kept pace with the growing diversity of our student population, neither in terms of who is teaching our classes nor in the curriculum they are taught. All students deserve to see themselves, their own cultures, communities, and histories within their education. Ethnic studies ensures that the diversity of Minnesota's classroom is reflected in students' curriculum. Students who see themselves in their curriculum have an increased sense of belonging. It is no surprise that studies have found that when students' experiences and backgrounds are reflected in their curriculum, they become more engaged in learning and achieve better educational outcomes. For example, in a study of three San Francisco high schools over 5 years, enrolling at-risk ninth grade students in an ethnic studies course resulted in a 21% increase in attendance and significant increase in student GPAs by as much as 1.4 points. Graduation rates and college enrollment were also markedly higher than comparable students who did not take ethnic studies. Ethnic studies also benefits all students of all racial and ethnic identities. Our students are growing up in a much more globalized and interconnected world than the world we grew up in. We need our education system to reflect that. Our students need to learn how to relate to and work with people with many different identities and cultural backgrounds. Ethnic studies equips students with the knowledge, perspectives, and skills they need to live and lead in a globalized world that is their future. Two of Minnesota's largest school districts, Minneapolis and St. Paul, have recently passed ethnic studies graduation requirements for their students. 21 states around the country have introduced bills to include ethnic studies or multicultural history for K-12 students. These decisions came from a recognition that ethnic studies is beneficial to their entire student populations. House File 3434 would offer those same benefits to all students in Minnesota. I want to be clear, ethnic studies will help our students understand the world around them. We need ethnic studies in the state of Minnesota. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I have several testifiers.
Thank you, Representative Frazier. First on the list, Michelle Chang with the Coalition of Asian American Leaders. Ms. Chang, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hello there, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Thank you so much for the opportunity to testify. My name is Michelle Chang. I am the lead organizer for education with the Coalition of Asian American Leaders. We are a social justice organization network with 5,000 Asian Minnesotan leaders across the state. We are also part of the Minnesota Ethnic Studies Coalition, composed of over two dozen organizations, including Education Liberation, Unidos, and Education Evolving. Our shared understanding of ethnic studies is the critical and interdisciplinary study of race, ethnicity, and indigeneity, with a focus on the experiences and perspectives of people of color. The goal of ethnic studies courses is to help cultivate students' knowledge of self while appreciating the differences around them and develop critical thinking skills to empower them to be agents of positive change. I support HF3434 because when I was in K-12, the only time I got to learn about Hmong history was outside of the classroom in after-school programs with other Hmong students. As a Hmong American, I hope for a tomorrow where young Hmong people and their peers learn about Hmong history as part of U.S. history and not just part of the Vietnam War section of textbooks. I see value in the rich cultural and ethnic histories that exist across communities in our state. To not include these histories and stories in the classrooms would be to say that the experiences of these communities are not real or relevant. It is time that schools recognize and include the assets in our own communities. We don't have to go far to learn about each other. Our young people thrive when they are able to relate to what they are learning in the classrooms. Ethnic studies courses would present a full and accurate education to our youth in which they can see themselves and all of their peers represented. Our youth need a change in our education system, and ethnic studies is one necessary step in that direction. I ask that you support HF3434 for a full and accurate education. Thank you for your work on behalf of Minnesotan students.
Thank you, Ms. Chang. Next on the list, James Alexander Robinson, Assistant Professor of Black Studies, Metropolitan State University. Professor Robinson, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good day. My name is James Alexander Robinson. I want to appreciate the chair and the committee for taking this time to discuss this important bill, HF3434. I am a native Minnesotan. My family's lived in Minnesota since 1900 and in America since 1754. I'm a native son of St. Paul's Rondo Committee. I went to high school and junior high school and elementary school in Minneapolis at the University of Minnesota Laboratory School. My mother's a retired teacher. My father worked with youth in inner city St. Paul and Minneapolis. He also worked with the Minnesota High School League for most of my life and served three governors, Republican and Democrats, on various boards for the state. I took my first ethnic studies related course at the Minnesota Institute for Talented Youth. But when I got to college in Minnesota and at Minnesota College, they did not have ethnic studies or African American studies or Asian American studies, Native American studies, or Chicano Latino studies. I had to go somewhere else. I was misinformed because the school was misinformed that you couldn't get a job in it. You couldn't go to graduate school in it. So I had to leave the state of Minnesota in order to get an education and to learn Black studies. So I'd like to briefly introduce what I'm calling the economic foundational rationale for ethnic studies. This past weekend, I was in Washington, D.C., at the College Board's committee hearing on the AP, Advanced Placement African American Studies Initiative, that's going on around the country. Minnesota is one school in Minnesota is a part of that at this point. One of the things that they discussed there was the fact that ethnic studies increases student success. They found that ethnic studies courses increases students' sense of themselves, their self-image, their self-identity, their self-esteem, and their self-knowledge. It strengthened their attitude towards learning. That is, you know thyself, you know, is one of the ultimate goals of ethnic studies coursework. But by increasing student success, it also increases student retention. It increases student graduation and graduation rates. And by implication, results in greater employment opportunities and an increase in income. As we all know, Minnesota is well known as a place of quality of life, of great educational institutions, of high home ownership, yet these images are contradicted when it comes to the experiences of Black peoples, indigenous peoples, people of color. For example, white household ownership in the state of Minnesota is over 75%. In contrast, Black home ownership is 25%. the suggestion here is that by introducing ethnic studies at the public school level, we will begin to increase the number of students who will go on to be successful in getting graduated from high school and getting degrees. It also creates new jobs. For example, in Iowa, the Kendall Hunt Publishing Company is one of the largest producers of ethnic studies textbooks in the country. Why couldn't that happen here in Minnesota? So ethnic studies can enhance the value of the cultural capital of local Minnesotan communities and develop a potential human capital in Minnesota students. I ask the committee to support HF 3434. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Professor Robinson. Next on the list is Professor Walter Greeson from McAllister. Professor Greeson, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you so much, Chair, and also to all committee members. It's an honor to be here with you all today. I really appreciate this opportunity to testify. My name is Walter Greeson. I am supporting Representative Frazier's bill, HF 3434. I am professor and chair of the Department of History at McAllister College here in St. Paul. I've also led more than two dozen successful civil rights initiatives around the country, most notably the restoration of national historic landmarks and the creation of an artistic and literary movement now called Afrofuturism. My students and families across my career have formed the center of my commitment to education. No field has done more to empower local communities than ethnic studies. Education too often is envisioned as a way to focus on training people to comply with authority. Ethnic studies places the students' voices and their choices at the center of education as a process of liberation. As a result, we have the most diverse and inclusive society in the nation's history, with state legislatures and federal representation that reflects this commitment to justice. I grew up in a small farming community dominated by racial segregation. As my family worked to challenge these barriers, it was the educators who were committed to ethnic studies who affirmed these efforts. Most clearly, it was Oti Mumalo, a South African exile during the last years of apartheid, who taught me the importance of ethnic studies work. His ideas derived from the work of Steve Biko, a student activist who celebrated Black consciousness. These ideas encouraged students like me around the world to embrace and celebrate all languages, cultures, and religions. This commitment shapes my work every day as I rebuild segregated communities, create new industries, and redirect private investment to serve the dreams of Indigenous, Black, White, Asian, and Latino families around the world. I thank you for your time, and I urge you to support HF 3434.
Thank you very much, Professor Greeson. Next, we have some student voices. First, Sylvia DeShazo from Southwest High School. Ms. DeShazo, I hope I'm pronouncing your name right. Please correct me, but introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
You certainly pronounced that correctly. Thank you. Good morning, Chair and committee members. My name is Sylvia DeShazo, and I'm a current senior at Southwest High School in Minneapolis Public Schools and a member of the Youth for Ethnic Studies Coalition and a few other youth groups. At a young age and up till present day, I have experienced racism in school and outside of school because of my identity and color, which continues to sadden me. The occurrences happen on many days where I continue dragging endless weights of all the stigmas placed on me that I can no longer keep track of. Ethnic studies, to me, empowers youth and adults with knowledge about various racial ethnic groups and how those groups have struggled against systemic racism, but also to learn about an individual's untold story, not just in social studies, but in all departments of education, such as STEM, performing arts, English, and so many more. In my school, as a musician, I desire to play more compositions by composers of color in band class and understanding their story behind such a masterpiece and its uniqueness. And as in for math, being a math lover too, I want to learn new methods of math by people of color, but besides just learning it, but also applying it into daily life.
the times I took an ethnic studies related course, they have impacted me by really understanding another culture and their history deeply, and that of better understanding my peers. But I wished I learned more about my own culture as well and background. The reason why I have not learned about my own cultural background and history as well as many others is because all I have been taught in history is through white perspectives. Those of us in our coalition of Youth for Ethnicities are tired and mentally drained of the racism and discrimination we continue to face that we see within our education system. One thing we hear sometimes is that this country was not an inherently racist country. However, the historical fact is racism is what developed this country. Native Americans were discriminated against, killed, and deprived of their land. Slavery of Africans was based off of racism, and it was also how this country was built for 246 years until the Civil War. Some people also don't understand the privileges that they have because they don't understand the multicultural history of our country. They don't have to experience racism like most people of color do. They don't understand how hard it was and still is to fight for the opportunity for people of color, the fight for respect and to fight to be equal and the fight to live. And racism is not gonna go away. But if people had a better understanding of it and a better understanding of each other, then we could have less racism. Having ethnic studies would bring us together with more mutual understanding of everyone's contributions and part in history. So please support the House File 3434.
Thank you, Ms. DeShazzo. Next on the list, and I do appreciate the testifiers keeping within the time limits out of respect for each other. Next on the list is Gaoxiong Her from North High School. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Gaoxiong Zoe Her. I'm a junior at North High School and a daughter of Hmong refugees. I'm here today because I believe that ethnic studies in every high school is absolutely necessary for our school environment and students to thrive. My whole life, I had no idea what it meant for me to be Hmong. Who were the Hmong people and how did they get here? It wasn't until I was in middle school that I answered these questions on my own, and I learned for the first time about the secret war in Laos. My people have fought in a whole war alongside the United States, and I never knew about it. I was searching through browsers and browsers trying to trace my roots. From villages to evading bullets, crossing jungle and rivers to poverty and refugee camps, these things were never included in our texts, almost like our history was meant to be forgotten and erased. This is what happens when a curriculum fails students like me. We're forced not only to educate ourselves, but others as well. In 2020, I saw how anti-Asian hate crimes rose because of the COVID-19 pandemic. For the first time, I was so scared to be an Asian girl in America, to the point where I couldn't even step outside my own home. That year in my AP World History class, we learned about COVID-19, but in our assignment, it was called the Wuhan and China virus. Seeing these words brought me shock and tears. I couldn't believe that my teacher thought that these words were appropriate, especially during the time of heightened violence against Asian Americans. During this incident, I had to educate my own educator about why these words were harmful because they promoted hatred towards students like me. It makes me sad and angry that I had to go through both of these experiences because we don't talk about racism and BIPOC history enough. I can't wait for the day that our students feel encouraged to embrace and share their differences with each other at school, which is supposed to be a safe and inclusive environment. We need ethnic studies now to promote understanding and love towards our peers. I urge you all to support Minnesota Youth through HF3434 to make an ethnic studies a graduation requirement for our schools. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Her. We had Pamela Lomeli, a student from Worthington High School, on the list to testify today, but of all things, she had to go back to class. So instead, we have Jessica Velasco reading Ms. Lomeli's comments. Ms. Velasco, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and then proceed with your testimony. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you, Chair and committee members. My name is Jessica Velasco. I have known Pamela for many years, but yes, she had to go back to class. So I will read her testimony. I will ask, though, just like we expect our students to pay attention in class to attain a lot of knowledge, I also ask that the adults here pay attention to what is being told and said to you, because that is their truth. Thank you. My name is Pamela Lomeli Ibarra. I am a senior at Worthington High School and a young organizer with Unidos Minnesota. I'm here today to ask you to vote yes on House File 3434. As a senior, I would have loved to have taken ethnic studies as a required graduation course. Although I understand that we already have set requirements, the opportunity to include ethnic studies would allow others like myself to see the impacts we have made in this great country. I have heard in previous committee hearings that we should focus on reading, writing, and math. Well, my response is this: not everyone enjoys reading, but it's when you see yourself and the possibilities all you can do and all you can be in a certain book that brings people to the joy of reading. And that joy of reading and love for reading would help a student stay engaged and focused, which would lead to better grades. I am asking on behalf of the younger students to include ethnic studies not only in high school, but starting in elementary. We deserve to see ourselves not only in books written by folks of color, but in the textbooks that tell us how this state and country were started and created. Because we were there. My great-grandparents and many like him had too much to do with this being called the great nation on earth. If you would like to have a dialogue with our youth from our area and know why this issue is important to us, we encourage you to reach out and do so. Thank you again and vote yes on House File 3434.
Thank you, Ms. Velasco. Next, Natalia Benjamin, an ethnic studies teacher from Rochester and the Minnesota Teacher of the Year in 2021. Privileged to have you here, Ms. Benjamin. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Natalia Benjamin and I teach in Rochester. I teach multilingual learners and ethnic studies to 9th through 12th graders and I'm the 2021 Minnesota Teacher of the Year. I can only hope to do for my students what ethnic studies has done for me as a Latinx teacher. For students who seldom see themselves in the curriculum or in their teachers, ethnic studies is a breath of fresh air. It might be the only time in schools where their identity is intentionally centered in the content of a class. For some, this is life-saving. For others, it is crucial knowledge to successfully live and work in our increasingly diverse society. Ethnic studies classes are uniquely designed for students to understand their unique identities, embrace each other's diversity, learn from the history of communities of color, and to empower students to be problem solvers in their communities. One of my students told me, I enjoyed hearing my peers' viewpoints and being able to openly talk about things that are going on in the world right now. In ethnic studies class, we work hard to build language to have respectful conversations on hard topics. Ethnic studies content is as important as ethnic studies pedagogy. Both are rooted in humanizing students' experiences. An example is building community and self-care. One student said, I enjoyed that we all really built our own community throughout the semester. Learning about each other and interacting with each other, I think that was special and cannot necessarily be replicated in any other class. Another tool is Youth Participatory Action Research, or YPAR. Last year, students identified an issue regarding grading at our school, developed surveys to gather information from students and staff, and prepared a report to the decision makers in the district, along with other recommendations. One of the students said, the YPAR project allows students to identify a problem in their society and work towards fixing it. Some of these students continue to be involved and have reached out to the school board and cabinet to solve problems they see at their schools. Should all students have access to ethnic studies? This is what one of my students said. Ethnic studies should be available and required towards graduation in every high school across America. I think this class shed light on a lot of issues and ideas that aren't necessarily discussed in other classes. Again, I urge the committee to please support this bill to make ethnic studies available to all students in K-12 schools and a graduation requirement for all students in Minnesota high schools. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Benjamin. Last testifier on my list, Professor Peter Ratcliffe, co-executive director of the Eastside Freedom Library and an emeritus professor of history at McAllister College. Professor Ratcliffe, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Daphne and committee members. My name is Peter Ratcliffe. I was a professor of American history at McAllister College from 1982 to 2014, when I left to co-found the Eastside Freedom Library here in St. Paul. I have served as the co-executive director ever since. I am also currently a member of the St. Paul Public Schools Critical Ethnic Studies Steering Committee. While I am not a Minnesotan by birth, I was hired by McAllister to be the history department's so-called local historian. And my research, writing, teaching, and involvement in public history came to center not only on the Twin Cities, but on the entire state of Minnesota, with a focus on immigration, race, class, and diversity. Through these lenses, I found out how rich and complex my adopted state's history is, and how many peoples have helped to shape our economic, political, and cultural development. Indeed, if we do not pay attention to these diverse experiences, we cannot understand how we became who we are, nor how we can become who we would like to be. My research took me to the Iron Range, where Finnish, Italian, Croatian, Serbian, Slovenian, Bosnian, and Herzegovinian immigrants provided the labor which dug the iron, which underpinned the Industrial Revolution across our country. It took me to the Red River Valley, where Mexican and Tejano immigrants picked sugar beets, which became part of the global food chain. It took me to the Western Plains, where Scandinavian and German immigration raised the wheat which made Minneapolis the flour capital of the world. My research also brought me into meatpacking plants from South St. Paul to Austin and Albert Lea and on to Worthington, where immigrants from all over the world performed the harsh and dangerous work that puts meat on dinner tables across the country. Here on the east side of St. Paul, Swedish, Irish, Italian, and Mexican immigrants made their homes in Sweet Hollow, built railroad tracks, worked in shoe and clothing factories, and cleaned middle and upper class homes. Today, Hmong, Karen, Somali, Oromo, Eritrean, Mexican, and Salvadoran immigrants provide healthcare support in hospitals, nursing homes, and private homes. They are, yes.
I need to ask you to sum up, please. Thank you.
Sure. So final point, these immigrants did not and do not only provide labor, they built churches and mutual benefit societies, organized unions, and built political parties. They, their children, and grandchildren have written books, created visual art and music, and more. They have shaped our history in so many ways that we cannot understand ourselves if we do not pay attention to their experiences. We owe it to ourselves, our children, and grandchildren to make ethnic studies central to our study of Minnesota history. I urge you to support Bill 3434. Thank you for your time and attention.
Thank you, Professor. Representative Kreisha?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And we have a hard stop in 3 minutes, right?
We do, sir.
All right. I'm going to hold my questions back for the omnibus. I'm sure it'll be in that bill. So thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Representative Frazier, last word goes to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks to my testifiers, especially to our students that I always love when we have the opportunity to hear their voices. And I always say that our youth are our salvation. We have to listen to them. We must listen to them. This ethnic studies bill will allow all of our students to have access to and gain an appreciation for the different cultures that they are interacting with throughout their lives and they will be interacting with throughout their lives. Our state is increasingly diversifying. It means that we must do what we need to do to make sure all of our students have the best education possible so they can become the future leaders that we need and want them to be in our state. Thank you all, and I hope you support this bill.
Thank you, Representative Frazier. With that, Representative Richardson renews her motion to lay over House File 3434 as amended for possible inclusion or further consideration at a later date. With that, members, thank you for your time. To the testifiers, thank you for joining us today. We are adjourned.